Let's go ahead and take our Bibles tonight to 2 Kings once again, and we're going to be looking in chapter number 14 this evening. We're going to look at King Amaziah, and once again, as we're going through some of these chapters and some of these kings, we will skip over some because some are just mentioned very shortly. But tonight, I think there's a message here with this King Amaziah that we can learn, and I want to encourage you tonight a little bit with it. Not only are we going to be in 2 Kings, usually we stay in that book and not do cross-referencing, but I think tonight in the story, it's going to help us some if we look at the same story, but gives us a little bit more details in 2 Chronicles chapter 25. So not only are we going to be in 2 Kings chapter 14, we're going to read there, kind of tell the story a little bit, but we're going to reconfirm some things, and there's a little bit more details in chapter 25 of 2 Chronicles telling the same story, but helps us understand some real truths. If you could characterize this man, it seems like there's something that was missing in his love for God. It seems like there was something missing in his walk with God. He wasn't sold out. The Bible says he didn't have a perfect heart. It says he served God like his father did, and his father did a good job, but he didn't serve him like David. So there was a portion there. There was something that was missing there. And tonight, as we look at the story, we're going to see three different things. First, I want to look at a parent's influence. Second thing, I want to talk about serving God part of the way is dangerous. And the third thing is God resisteth the proud. So let's go ahead and jump into this. In 2 Kings chapter number 14, we're going to read through, kind of tell the story like we do many times on Wednesday night, and then skip over to 2 Chronicles chapter 25 and do the same thing and try to emphasize a few points I think the scripture is clear about. 2 Kings chapter number 14, in the second year of Joash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. So remember, there were two different Joashes. We learned about that last week. They even were reigning at the same time in Israel and also in Judah. But we see this is the one that's in Israel. Joash had passed away on the scene. It said, reign Amaziah, the son of Joash, the king of Judah. So those names can make it confusing sometimes. It's good to write out a chart if you really want to know what's going on and understand. He was 25 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. He had a good long reign, and his mother's name was Jehoadan of Jerusalem. Now, you say, they always mention the mother. Well, here's a couple reasons. Number one is the mother's influence. You know, whether this king turned out good or bad, many times had a lot to do with the mother, especially when they started off really young. Secondly, kings had many wives. So this would be able to help show the heritage and the lineage that was shown. Verse number three, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. So that's a good thing. You know, that's usually the way the marker is set. They did evil in the sight of the Lord, or they did right was in the sight of the Lord. So it talked about the overall ministry that was there. He did that was right in the sight of the Lord. And it says in verse number three, it seems like there's a little exclamation point there, or a little asterisk. Yet not like David, his father. He did according to all the things that Joash, his father, did. So he didn't serve God with all of his heart, sort of like David was known as a man after God's own heart. He served God like he learned from his father. His father did a good job, but there were some things that were lacking there. And let's keep on going. Howbeit, the high places were not taken away. As yet, the people did sacrifice and burnt incense on the high places. You see this happen many times when it says that the king did what was right in the sight of the Lord, but they did not remove the high places. And that's a really interesting thought, and we're going to tie that in a little bit tonight, is these high places, where many of them were set up by Solomon as they were worshiping false gods. Now, there are times when they were used to worship the one true God, but if you go back and where how they were supposed to worship and how they were supposed to burn sacrifice, it was found in Jerusalem. It wasn't supposed to be, hey, wherever you want to go. So these things became places where they worship idols, but also they were worshiping God, but they were doing it in their own way. So that's when you see here, when they're writing it down, it says, hey, look, they didn't take away the high places. And when you read that over and over and over, I remember the first time in 1 Kings and 2 Kings as I read that, I was thinking, what's the deal with these high places? And it was showing that they were making revival, they were doing what was right, but there's still something there they weren't willing to clean all the way up. They were willing to do a lot of things good in the sight of the Lord, but there was still something that they held on to because it became a tradition. It became a stronghold. It became something that people enjoy doing, and they would do in the name of the Lord, but God is the one here saying they should have removed the high places. And there are a few kings we're going to see that do remove the high places, but that's for another time. And it came to pass, as soon as the kingdom was confirmed in his hand, that he slew his servants, which he had slain the king, his father. So he waits until the king, he is officially king, everyone is under his hand, and then he takes care of those who murdered his father. Verse number 6, but the children of the murderers he slew not, according to that which is written in the book of the law of Moses, wherein the Lord commanded, saying, the father shall not be put to death for the children, nor the children be put to death for the fathers, but every man shall be put to death for his own sin. And it's an interesting thought there, but we're all accountable for our own sins. And you know, once again, as a father, I have a responsibility, and I will be held accountable for how I raise my sons, and they will have accountability on how they reacted to my raising, my wife, training them. They're going to have that accountability. But what's saying here is you're going to be accountable for your own sin. You're going to be punished according to this, that they were not supposed to kill the children just because of what the father did. Verse number 7, it says, he slew of Edom in the valley of Salt 10,000 and took Selah by war and called it the name of Jokathiel until this day. And Amaziah sent messengers to Joash. So we see here in verse number 70, he goes, he wins a battle. The Edomites many years earlier had rebelled against Israel underneath the wicked king. And now he had taken him and brought him back under Israel. And now Amaziah is feeling pretty good here. He had just defeated a small little portion. So he thinks that God's going to help him again and defeat the nation of Israel. And remember, there's two separate nations here. There's Judah and Israel. He's going to go after a much larger nation that is even bigger. Remember, there's 10 tribes in the northern kingdom, only 2 tribes in the southern kingdom, but he thinks he's going to be able to win. He's puffed up and prideful because of what just happened in Edom. Then Amaziah sent messengers to Joash, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, and saying, come, let us look one another in the face. And you might say, well, they just want to see each other. Now, they're talking about fighting in a battle. They want to have war. Now, remember, Amaziah here is not just going to fight Joash. They're going to bring thousands of soldiers versus thousands of soldiers. And it's not like it's a duel one-on-one. There's many people that are affected by pride and the sin that's here. In verse number 9, and Joash, the king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, and he talks in a parable here. He says, the thistle, which is like it's like a weed that kind of rumbles around, that was in Lebanon, sent to the cedar. And cedar is a stately tree. It's big. So he's saying, look, you're nothing but a weed compared to me as being a big tree in Lebanon, saying, give thy daughter to my son to wife. And there passed by a wild beast that was in Lebanon and trode upon the thistle. He's saying that they would destroy them. This is the king of Israel saying it to the king of Judah. Then he says to him something that has a lot of truth. Thou hast indeed smitten Edom, and thy heart has lifted thee up. Glory of this. He says, be happy and satisfied with that, and tarry at home. For why shouldest thou meddle in thy hurt that thou shouldest fall, even thou and Judah with thee? He says, don't come to fight us. He says, you're going to end up losing. You're going to fall, and all Judah with you. But Amaziah would not hear. Therefore, Joash, king of Israel, went up, and he and Amaziah, the king of Judah, looked one another in the face at Beth Shemesh, which belongeth to Judah. And Judah was put to the worse before Israel, and they fled every man to their tents. And Joash, king of Israel, took Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh, and came to Jerusalem, and brake down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim unto the corner gate, 400 cubits. So he goes, they destroy the wall, and he took all the gold and silver and all the vessels that were found in the house of the Lord and the treasure of the king's house and hostages and returned to Samaria. So we see what happened here. He does well for a little while. The Bible gives him a little bit of a condemnation. He says, look, he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, but he missed something. And in 2 Chronicles chapter 25, you see a little bit more of an interpretation, a little bit more commentary in it. So let's go ahead and turn our Bibles there. We'll read through the story, and then we'll get to the message. 2 Chronicles chapter number 25. You have the same story about Amaziah, the same story about the Edomites, a little bit more detail, same story about with Joash. 2 Chronicles chapter 25 and verse number 1. Amaziah, 2 Chronicles 25, is a couple books over. Amaziah was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jonadab of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. So there was something wrong there. He had divided loyalties. He wanted to serve the Lord out in public, but he wanted to do things his way. His heart was not perfect. It was not mature. It was not only on God. It was on other things also. That's a dangerous thing to do. Now it came to pass when the kingdom was established to him that he slew his servants that had killed the king his father. We talked about that. But he slew not their children, but did as it was written in the law in the book of Moses. So he's obeying the law, he's following the rules. Where the Lord commanded, saying, the father shall not die for the children, neither shall the children die for the fathers, but every man shall die for his own sin. Moreover, Amaziah gathered Judah together and made them captains over thousands and captains over hundreds, according to the houses of their fathers. Throughout all Judah and Benjamin, remember those are the two tribes, he numbered them from 20 years and above, and found them 300,000 choice men able to go forth to war that could handle spear and shield. So they were able to, they've been taught and trained. He hired also 100,000 mighty men of valor out of Israel for 100 talents of silver. So he kind of hires mercenaries. He says, my 300,000 is not enough. I want more. He goes and hires some extra. But there came a man of God to him saying, and it's a prophet, O king, let not the army of Israel go with thee, for the Lord is not with Israel, to wit, with all the children of Ephraim. So there's a prophet that comes and says, hey, look, you don't need to take these 100,000. He said, God is not with them. God's not going to bless that. And once again, it looks like he did not ask God what he should do. He did not ask God his opinion. And once again, if we would ask God lots of times, we're gonna save a lot of problems. If we seek the Lord and wisdom and guidance, we're going to save ourselves a lot of heartache. And he says in verse number 8, he's not happy about what the prophet's saying. But if thou wilt go to do it, be strong for the battle. God shall make thee fall before the enemy, for God hath power to help and to cast down. So what he's saying is, hey, look, you go to battle with these men, you're going to die. You're going to be cast down. Or God can lift you up. And Amaziah said to the man of God, but what shall we do for the 100 talents which I have given to the army of Israel? He's saying, what about all that money I paid? And the man of God answered, the Lord is able to give thee much more than this. He says, look, don't worry about that. God can do so much more than that. And then Amaziah separated them, to wit, the army that was come to him out of Ephraim to go home again. Wherefore their anger was greatly kindled against Judah, and they returned home in great anger. So the 100,000 got upset. Now, why would they get upset? They're getting paid and didn't have to do anything. Well, remember, when they knock out a kingdom, many times they would take the spoils of the war. So they were looking not only to receive their pay, but also to maybe take some slaves back or take spoil from the area that they were going to take out. It says in verse 11, Amaziah strengthened himself and led forth his people and went to the valley of Salt and smote the children of Seir 10,000. And other 10,000 left alive did the children of Judah carry away captive and brought them into the top of the rock and cast them down from the top of the rock that they all were broken in pieces. Now, that doesn't sound very pretty, but they slay people with the sword and with the spear. The rest, they have them fall over a cliff. Why would they do that? You know, it was a save, having to clean up after it. Also, you know, be able to take over the land without having to deal with all the dead bodies. And it says, verse number 13, but the soldiers of the army which Amaziah sent back, talking about the 100,000, that they should not go with the battle, fell upon cities of Judah from Samaria even to Bethoron. Now, these were cities that used to belong to the nation of Israel's side that Judah had taken away from them, and smote 3,000 of them and took much spoil. So the 100,000 were upset. They went to these cities that had originally been taken from them years earlier. They kill 3,000. They take their spoil that they thought they deserved from before. Let's keep on going. Now it came to pass that after Amaziah was come from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the children of Seir. Now look at this. Remember, he served the Lord. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, but his heart wasn't perfect. That left a door open that when he saw these idols, they were so beautiful and so attractive, he took them with him. And he set them up to be his gods. Now, God has just delivered him from the Edomites. And he has set them up to be his gods and bowed down himself before them and burned incense unto them. Wherefore the anger of the Lord was kindled against Amaziah, and he sent unto him a prophet, which said unto him, Why hast thou sought after the gods of the people, which could not deliver their own people out of thine hand? Now, you think about it, that's kind of interesting. The prophet comes to him, Why are you being stupid? He says, How dumb are you? You bring the idols from the people that you just conquered. You set them up. You bow down to them. Why in the world would you bow down to an idol that could not deliver you, deliver them out of your own hand? You just defeated this enemy. And you're saying those idols are something you're supposed to be worshiping, but it's the one true God who had saved them. Remember, sin is something that is ridiculous many times. Sin is stupid at times. And there's common sense here. Why would he turn to false gods that could not deliver the Ephraimites out of the hand, the children of Zerah out of the hand of the Judahs? But instead, in verse 16, how does he respond? Does he take the criticism well? Does he take the rebuke? Came to pass, as he talked with him, that the king said unto him, Art thou made of the king's counsel? Forbear, why shouldest thou be smitten? He says, Be quiet or you're going to get hit. He says, Be quiet or you're going to be punished. Remember, even though some people think it'd be cool to be a prophet, sometimes the messages are not popular. Sometimes the messages are things that need to be said, but they're not things that are easy to be said or very well taken. So then the prophet forbear, saying he stopped. He had given his warning, but he has one last comment and said, I know that God has determined to destroy thee because thou hast done this and hast not hearkened unto my counsel. Then Amaziah, king of Judah, took advice and sent unto Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel. He said, Come, let us see one another in the face. So we see the same story. Let's drop down a little bit down to verse number 21. So Joash, the king of Israel, went up, and they saw one another in the face, both he and Amaziah, king of Judah, at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was put to the worse before Israel, and they fled every man to his tent. And Joash, the king of Israel, took Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Beth Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem, and break down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And then the same thing, he took those different things, and he was able to defeat Amaziah and Judah. You say, well, that was Israel. Israel was doing wrong. Israel was doing wickedness. Why would God allow Israel to defeat Judah when they were doing a portion of what was right? Look what it says in verse number 20 in this chapter, and then we'll go back to 2 Kings 14. Verse number 20, it says, But Amaziah would not hear, for it came of God that he might deliver him into the hands of their enemies, because they sought after the gods of Edom. You know, he did not want to be corrected. He had done so many things that were right for a portion of time, he thought he was above getting corrected and above getting rebuked. Now, this is where the danger part comes in. When we choose to serve God partly, mostly, we choose to have some type of things in our lives and we want to serve the Lord maybe like our father did or like someone else did, but not with a whole heart like David did. That was the condemnation. That was the thing that was a little bit of a heartache. You can kind of apply it back to the high places. It's sort of like he wanted to wipe things out. He wanted to clean things out. Joash did some real wonderful things, and he did those things like his father, but he did not want to do it all. He did not want to get rid of it all. And we got to remember that in our Christian lives. We think that we're doing pretty well when we have sacrificed and we have made God very important in our lives. But what happens is when we leave a little bit of an area out there for the devil to enter in, and if our heart is not perfect, if we're not sold out, if we're not given over to the Lord, you know what can happen? Is we can become prideful. You know, he went and defeated the Edomites. And you see in the story here, there was a prophet that came and stopped and said, if you take these 100,000 men, you're not going to survive. And God used the 300,000 that he didn't think was going to be able to win the battle. He used those 300,000. So God is revealing himself to him. He's making himself strong to him. He's saying, you do not need the world's help. You do not need Israel's help, that you can do this with me. So here's three things I want you to think about. The first thing is I want you to think about is a parent's influence, a parent's influence. And you say, where do you see that in the story? When I was reading it, I found it kind of interesting that the parent's influence. The first thing is that in 2 Kings chapter 14, also in 2 Chronicles 25, the comment is made about how he worshiped God. He says, and he in 14, verse number 3, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like David his father. He did according to all things as Joash his father did. Think about the great influence Joash had. Now, once again, he was much better than Ahab, wasn't he? He was much better than any of the other wicked kings. Joash had done things, but he didn't get rid of the high places. He showed his son how to serve God, but serve God only to a point, not willing to give himself completely over. So as David, and he said, well, you keep on talking about David. Well, God put David as the standard. It wasn't me. Now, we wouldn't choose David because of our sins, the sins that he did, the sins with Bathsheba, the sins of Uriah, some of the other things that he did that was wrong. But God put him as a standard the way that David worshiped and the way that David lived for him. He did it wholeheartedly. He gave himself and everything. He was the one that was willing to fight Goliath. He was the one that was willing to let God protect him as those years of Saul. He was used mightily by God. He learned from, and Amaziah learns from his father Joash as the king. He learns some good things, but he also learns not to follow the Lord with his whole heart. His heart wasn't perfect. Now, what do we learn from that? We learn that people are sons and are daughters. They watch us and they learn things from us. Let me first and say foremost, I want my sons to go way past me spiritually. I want them to raise up and be a deliverer, and I want God to use them in great and mighty ways. The things I struggle with, I pray that they never have to struggle with, and I pray, and I know that they've watched, and I know they've discerned, and you know, one's a senior, some already, and one's in college, but you know, they learn things from their parents. You say, well, in this room, and do we have anybody that has kids sitting at home? We have one that's coming on a way over here with the Riddicks, but there isn't a lot of other ones. There are some that have some that are home, that are, but most of the kids are out of the house, at least the majority of them. You know, what do we do today? We tell this to our kids. We're all honest with them. And we say to them, you know what, maybe I made mistakes. We show as an example here, Joash taught his son a lot of good things, but they didn't teach him to follow after the Lord with their whole heart. There was something that was missing there. And I'm always learning, and I'm always growing, and I'm always trying to, but you, many of you are grandparents and have, you know, great grandparents sometimes, and you're like, well, I wish my kids would raise these kids differently. Now, this is the story that says, you know, they've learned a lot of things. Now, you say, Pastor, my kids didn't turn out the way I trained them. I get that. You see, that's the verse down there. It talks about how the father isn't responsible for the kid, and the kid's not responsible for the father's sins. They have their own answer. They will be accountable for themselves. But you see also here there is great influence. You see the mention of always the mothers, and I think it has something to do with the lineage, and you know, so important it was for the kings, and you know, we know that Mary was from the line of David, and we know Joseph was from the line of David. Why is that? Because the lineage that was kept. But I want you to, the importance of learning and watching from somebody else. Remember that. And not even now of just kids. People learn from us here at church too. As older, teaching younger. Man, they see it when a person is in love with the Lord and serving the Lord and want to do things with their whole heart. They see when people are praying. They see when people are at an altar. They see when people are out telling other people about Jesus Christ. They see the way people react and how people act and the things they do. They are learning a lot from those that are around us, and I'm concerned what they pick up with the generation, because many of us are disgusted about some of the things that this generation is coming up is doing. Not all. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of great young people that are serving the Lord and want to live for God. A lot of great young people that do a lot of hard work. But when we think about many of the generations that are coming up, we need to make sure we're showing them, teaching them godly things so they can learn from. And I know that there's people that have kids in the home still inside this auditorium, and we can work with that and we can grow and try to help them. But I think as a church family, what do our young people see? What do they see from us? Do they learn, grow? There is an influence that happened to this man's life. And once again, he did really well. He served, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. The second thing is, you see a parent's influence. Second thing is, you seeing God, serving God part of the way is dangerous. Serving God part of the way is dangerous. When you think about, what do you think about what they meant the difference between the way Joash served the Lord and David served the Lord? It said David was a man after God's own heart. Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord. So it was someone who wanted to do what was right in the sight of the Lord, who went through the motions. He kept the sacrifices. He made sure the temple was right. He wanted to do what was right. And those are all commendable things, but there was something going on in his heart. There was something in his heart that he wasn't completely, totally in. There, he had a divided loyalty. The Bible says in Matthew 6:24, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he would hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. He didn't clear out the high places in his life. He didn't get rid of he didn't say, okay, Lord, whatever it is you want, I'm willing to get rid of it all. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. Once again, if he got rid of his high places, some people are going to be mad. Some people who even said, that's the place where I worship God at. And we've got to remember in our lives that there are sometimes things that hold us back and some things that are in our heart that makes us not perfect towards him. What does the Bible talk about in 2 Chronicles somewhere? It talks about how he wants to show himself strong. I think it's 16 verse 9. To those whose heart is perfect. Meaning that their heart is right with the Lord. He wants to show himself strong in their lives. And he did that in Amaziah's life. And Amaziah was willing to honor the prophet and willing to listen to the prophet and willing to send the other 1,000 home. He was willing to show himself strong and win a battle that he didn't think he could win on his own. And to God be the glory. But Amaziah, his heart wasn't perfect. His heart wasn't all in. So because of that, when he saw these other idols, he listened to the devil and he listened to the desires of his heart. And he brought these idols back, and it says they burned incense. He said that he bowed down to an idol even though God had just delivered him. And how often in our lives do we bow down to God, bow down to an idol just after God's done something special? See, after a victory, sometimes, man, the devil will try to beat you over the head. You see it often with young Christians that are on fire, wanting to serve God and do this and do that, and wanting to be faithful, and then they turn around and, you know, they slip up. Why is that? It's because of the fact that when you're doing well, you become a prime target for the devil. The question is, have you cleared out the high places in our hearts and life today? Is there something in our lives that we know our heart isn't perfect about? Is there some type of high place? And what is a high place? Is an idol. It's something that we've put before God. You know, God, we know you want to do it this way, but God, I want to do it my way. And because I want to do it my way, my heart's not going to be right with you. And maybe it's a sport. Maybe it's a hobby. Maybe it's a job. Maybe it's a family. You know, all those things are good. Maybe it's even a ministry. But if when we say, hey, I want this, and I'm going to take this no matter what it costs to me, that is a high place that we need to clean out in our hearts and clean out in our lives. What are different high places? You know, there could be TV programs, it could be music, it could be so many different things. But there's two sides of every coin. If you love the world, you'll despise the Lord. So, no, that's not true. That's exactly what happened with Amaziah. He's bowing down to his idols. The prophet of God comes up to him and says, what you're doing is wrong. It's foolish. Does he say, you know what? You're right. I need to turn back to God. He doesn't. What does he do? He says to him, you better be quiet or you're going to die. I'm going to smite you. He goes, you know, forbear. You shut up. Why? He's despising the counsel of God. And because of that, it leaves a door open. If you despise the Lord, you're going to make the ungodly happy. If you make the ungodly happy, then you're going to make the godly unhappy. If you please the devil, you're going to provoke the Lord. And you got this truth, and there is lies, there is right, and there is wrong. So if there is something that is a high place in our heart and life, and say, you know what, I need to let go of this. I need to clear this out, so that way I can serve the Lord with a perfect heart. It's worth it. Because the third thing here is God resisteth the proud. Here's the point, is that when we consider in our lives that we think we know better than God, and we will not take correction, we're lifted up by ourselves. And the Bible says that he giveth grace to the humble, but he resisteth the proud. And that's exactly what happens to Amaziah. He wins this battle against the Edomites. He thinks he's something special. He puffs out his chest and he's like, hey, look what we did. And he even takes bad counsel. If you go to 2 Chronicles, it talks about how they listened to the council and they decided, we're going to go up and we're going to take on Israel. Now, do we know why? Maybe it was because the 100,000 was angry and they went and knocked out those cities and did those things. And I can understand that they want retribution. But even the king of Israel, who was a wicked man, says to him, don't even try it. Don't even come up, because of the fact that you're going to lose and you're going to hurt yourself and you're going to hurt your city. You're going to hurt you're going to have your wall torn down. You're going to lose all these things. It's not worth it. But see, it's amazing. Amaziah thought in his heart, God helped me over here. God's going to help me over here too. But he forgot all about the sin right here. He forgot about the bowing down. He forgot about the correction. He helped me over here with the Edomites. He's going to help me. I do what's right in the sight of the Lord. Of course he's going to let me defeat the Israelites that don't do what's right in the sight of the Lord. But Amaziah forgot that right here, he's sinning. He's doing wrong. His heart's not right. This is a dangerous thing, that when we think we're living for God and we still have those high places in our life, we're depending upon God to fix our problems. We're depending on God to take care of these issues and take care of these things. But we're forgetting there's a high place here. There's something that we're bowing down to. And yes, we want God's blessing. Yes, we want God's will. Yes, we want to know what the next step is and how God can use me to make a difference in this world. But we're forgetting right over here, I'm bowing down to something I don't belong to. I'm bowing down to something that God has delivered me from, but I keep on going back to it. The high places. We need to get rid of those high places in our life. We need to say, okay, I'm done with this. And now, God, I'm seeking you. Tell me what you want me to do. Nowhere do you see Amaziah going before the Lord and saying, God, do you want me to go take on Israel? God, I know I didn't earlier ask you, and because of that, 3,000 people died in the cities of Judah, and I made a mistake there, and I was wrong, and the prophet gave me the answer last time. God, will you give me the answer today? And so many times we're seeking God's answer and seeking God's best and seeking God's deliverance, but we're still bowing down to the idols of the children of Zer. God, I want you to help me, but I'm still bowing down to something else. And all along, we still have influence. Kids, teenagers, husbands and wives. And I like Amaziah. He's doing what's right. The scary thing is I see a lot of modern day Christians in Amaziah's life. They're doing what's right in the sight of the Lord. Everybody from the outside looks good. But their heart's not perfect. Because their heart's not perfect, it's leaving a door open. There's some type of high place that's there that they haven't cleaned out. Because they haven't cleaned it out, we're seeking God and we want God. God, how am I supposed to fix my family? God, how am I supposed to help my grandkids? God, how am I supposed to do this? I'm counting on God to take care of me, to defeat the nation of Israel, because I think that is what's best. But I don't know God's will because I'm not doing my best for God. I haven't served him with a perfect heart. Instead, there's a high place in my life that I'm bowing down to, and I can't hear from him. The obvious next step is to take on Israel. There's no way that they should have taken those 3,000 of my people. There's no way they should have taken that spoil. There's no way. Of course I'm going to go attack those guys. That's what God wants me to do next. But we don't know. It's because we're over here and we're bowing down to our idol. We're bowing down to the thing that is our high place. We're saying, hey, this is more important to me than God. We need to remove some of those high places so we can hear clearly what the next step is. Obviously, the next step wasn't Israel, because they end up losing, and they ended up losing many lives. They end up losing slaves. They end up losing the treasures that was in the house of God, the things that were taken and sanctified before God and put inside a temple, and it was supposed to be something. You say, well, how could God ever allow that to happen? Could you imagine if God let Amaziah win that battle? What Amaziah would have been thinking then? It would have been, hey, look, I'm doing really good. The only way that Amaziah was going to learn, it's a tough lesson to learn sometimes, is when our sin finds us out, when we reap what we sow. We believe that God is going to bless our mess sometimes, but we don't even understand that we're bowing down to something that we don't belong to. I remember a couple of times in the Bible where people thought, okay, I'm going to use God as a lucky rabbit's foot. And that's what I think Amaziah is doing here. He says, of course we're going to go there. God's going to help us again. Think about Hophni and Phinehas, how they took the ark of the God out there in the Philistines, and there was this great noise. And what happened that day? They lost the ark. I think about the nation of Israel when they refused to go into the promised land. Moses gave them their correction. Moses gave them their punishment. And what did they do? Oh, we're going to go attack them now anyway. We're going to do what we were supposed to anyway. And they ended up losing their lives. Over and over, people think that, hey, I can bow down and have a lack of faith where I want, and then I can ask God, because I can use his name, I can carry his ark, I can carry my Bible, and think that God's going to bless that. We need to clear out the high places. We need to have a desire to serve God the way David did. Once again, we're not putting a man on a pedestal. God is the one that used that as a benchmark, a person after God's own heart. And is there some type of high place in our hearts and lives? Once again, people went to these high places, and they worshiped God at those high places, and they said, what I'm doing right now is a worship and a sacrifice to God. But God's saying, I don't want it done there. God's saying, I want you to do it my way. And how many times we do things over and over and over, saying, I'm doing this for the Lord, I'm doing this for the Lord, I'm doing this for the Lord, but we're doing it our own way. We need to be careful to get rid of those high places in our lives and let God lead us and guide us. There is influence we have over individuals. Maybe your children may be out of the house, maybe still there. There is influence we have over individuals. Remember that. And let's make sure that we impress that upon our young people that are coming up. Do your best now. They're listening, they're watching, they're learning. It's dangerous to serve the Lord with only a portion of your heart. You're not going to serve two masters. One day it may be God that you're in for, but if your heart's not perfect, there may be a day that you're bowing down to the children of Zer that you have been delivered from, their idols. And last but not least, God resisteth the proud. Don't leave tonight saying, ah, that's foolishness. God's pleased with the way I do things, even though you know there's something that you're holding on to. Get rid of those high places in your life. Let's go ahead and stand to our feet, heads bowed and eyes closed, for a time of invitation.